You guys, how important is sleep temperature? It's everything to me. And this is where Chili Pad by Sleep Me comes in. Its mission is to elevate the quality of human life through cool sleep. The Chili Pad bed cooling system is your new bedtime solution. It lets you customize your sleeping environment to your optimal temperature, ensuring you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Chili Pad works with your existing mattress. It's a water-based mattress topper that continuously controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees. It's designed for one or two sleepers. So if your partner likes to sleep at a different temperature, or you only need it for one side of the bed, it still works. I just put this on top of my existing mattress and voila. So whether you're dealing with night sweats or simply seeking a better night's rest, Chili Pad is here to transform your existing mattress into a sanctuary of cool, relief, and comfort. Visit www.sleep.me/FTL to get your Chili Pad and save up to $315 with code FTL. This offer is exclusively available for the Love listeners. Only for a limited time. So order it today with free shipping and try it out for 30 days. You can return it for free if you don't like it with your sleep trial. So visit www.sleep.me/FTL because every woman deserves to wake up feeling refreshed and ready to conquer the day ahead. Have you ever noticed how celebrities have brighter, whiter looking eyes? Their makeup artists have a little secret in their kit. Lumify Redness Reliever Eye Drops. You guys, I use these every single day. Lumify dramatically reduces redness in just 1 minute. It literally happens right before your eyes to help them look brighter, whiter, and more awake for up to 8 hours. No wonder it is so loved by influencers, celebrities, and makeup artists, and has over 6,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Lumify is also the number one eye doctor recommended redness reliever eye drop, and it's FDA approved. No bleach, no dyes. Plus, it's made by the eye care experts at Bausch & Lomb. So whether you're on set, on a date, or running on just a few hours of sleep, you can have eyes that look brighter and whiter with Lumify eye drops. And when you try it, you'll see that it is what your eyes have been looking for. So check out LumifyEyes.com to learn more. Hey everyone, Jen Hatmaker here, your host of the For the Love podcast. You guys, welcome to the show. I know why you hit download. This is a special bonus episode on the podcast today. And I'm honored and I'm humbled that she's here. I was absolutely looking forward to this conversation with such a courageous and incredible person who has been through such an ordeal. And I was really moved by how candid and honest and kind of tender she was in this interview. So obviously I'm talking about Brittany Griner. Oh man. I mean, as we all know, I mean, who didn't know, who wasn't watching? Brittany was detained in Russia for nearly 10 months, 2 years ago. She's a world-class athlete, and she was going over to Russia for her international league, which she had done for 10 years. And after a nearly empty cannabis oil vape and cartridge was found in her luggage, she was taken to Russian jail. It was deemed a wrongful detainment and sparked international outrage, obvious concerns over her safety. And so after a pretty arduous back channel negotiation, Brittany was released finally in a prisoner swap in December of 2022. So in her new book, which is called appropriately Coming Home, it just released on May 7th. She goes into pretty great detail about surviving the mental and physical trauma while detained and incarcerated and isolated for so long. It's unbelievable. And it's generous of her to give this much of her story to the wider public like this. And we get into it and she spares nothing. And so I'm grateful for that she's willing to tell the story at personal cost, and we're relieved to have her home. So we dive in today to the harrowing experience, the realities of what did it look like day-to-day life in Russian detainment, how she survived it, what she learned, what she's hopeful for now. So just in case you didn't know, Brittany Griner is one of the most decorated and influential athletes of her generation. So not to put too fine a point on it, but she's an NCAA champion where she played for Baylor. She's a WNBA champion, two-time Olympic gold medalist, winner of the Best Female Athlete ESPY Award. She was the number one pick in the 2013 WNBA draft to Phoenix Mercury, named Rookie of the Year that season. She's a nine-time WNBA All-Star, and Brittany is the first openly gay American pro athlete to sign a major shoe and apparel deal with a little company called Nike. Outside of that, she's a huge supporter of LGBTQ plus causes. She's worked with the It Gets Better Project. She's a native of Houston, proud daughter of a military vet and retired law enforcement officer. And so she's also partnered with organizations serving veterans and people experiencing homelessness. She's not just a world-class athlete. She's a world-class person. She's married to Sherelle, who she met at Baylor. And fun news, Sherelle and Brittany just recently announced they are expecting their first child this summer. Everything's coming up roses for her. I'm so happy for her. Welcome to the show and enjoy this fascinating conversation with the outstanding Brittany Griner. Brittany, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to meet you. You're straight from practice.
Straight from practice.
No, there's no rest for the weary. Just so glad to have you here. Thanks. I'm excited to talk to you about your book. I'm excited to talk to you about your story. There's got to be a bit of a strange sensation for you because all of us, meaning the world, feel like we know you and we know so much about you and we have been so invested in you and in your story and in your return. It's crazy to have such a community of folks who've been rooting for you from afar. And so it's just great to see you just being here. Just look at you. There you are, just normal just at your house. Yeah. It's just like a miracle. It's a miracle. Yeah, it's amazing.
No, definitely a miracle. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. 100%.
It's got a book coming out and I'm excited to talk to you about it. Let me ask you this first, before we get into it. How'd you find the writing process? Like, it's no joke to write a book.
It's not. It's no small ordeal. I was very lucky. I had a great writer, had a great, just great whole team, editor, everybody. They understood that this was challenging at the same time and triggering. So there was times where I just needed a break. Like, I can't talk right now. They were definitely understanding and made the process so good for me.
You went back into the darkest days of your life, and it's almost like a reliving, which goes back to my original comment to you, which is thank you for this labor. It's a labor of love to bring this story into the world and knowing that it's going to serve a lot of people in a lot of ways doesn't make it any easier to go back to the mat on it and dredge it back up and really in full detail, not from even a high level, but like you're back in it. And so it almost needs its own recovery process, the retelling of it. Yeah.
It does.
How are you feeling? Does it come out May 7th?
May 7th. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes,
ma'am. How are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling really good. A little nervous, a little anxious about it. You know, you never know how people are going to react. You know, you're always going to have the great, but then you're also going to have the critics, but I didn't write it for the critics. I wrote it for the people that really wanted to understand and that really wanted to hear this story all the way through.
That's right. That's right. And I appreciate that because as mentioned, like we were watching and we cared and we were so worried for you and invested in your return and injustice and so many days, just so many days. And so it's a gift to the world. And I love how you said you're not writing for the critics. It took me a while to learn that. That's just writing for the critics shows when you're doing that. And it also shows when you're writing from the heart for the people that love you. Let's talk about your story a little bit. I think one of the details that sticks out as you tell it was like leading up to that horrible day in Russia was what truly was like a series of unfortunate events, like this domino effect of things that had to happen in order to escalate this situation, like beyond all comprehension, reluctantly deciding to do another year in Russia, starting there. Like that started back on American soil and packing at the last minute and then getting profiled. I wonder if you could walk us through those earliest moments, you know, when you're just living your ordinary life, doing ordinary things. Was that your 10th year, I think, that you traveled to Russia?
Yes, it was. It was. It was my 10th year. So, you know, I've done this trip so many times, too many times at this point. I was having a great Valentine's Day with my wife. She normally plans everything, but this was my year to surprise her. So I'm like, don't lift a finger. And that's how we stumbled into, oh, babe, I got it. I'll pack my bags. Me packing my bags, throwing all my stuff in there. So she, because I mean, we have such a short amount of time and I already extended out a couple of days because I was recovering from COVID as well. So throwing everything together, tried to hightail it to the airport the next day. Just so many, you know, like when the universe is like throwing you signs to sit still, but you don't listen. That was me. Car keys. I had the car keys all the way at the gate, had to send them out with a worker, being late to the airport when I'm never late. Couldn't find my phone for hours. COVID test, because we were still in that time of like, oh, you have to have it 48 hours before you land. Or I was off by 20 minutes. So it was just so many things that were like, don't go. But of course, I gotta finish what I start. Got to finish what I start. So I had to be there for my team.
Can you talk a little bit about that first day, that second day, that third day? It's actually hard to believe. It was hard to believe at the time as just onlookers watching it going, oh, wait, okay. It was this, we all had this sense like someone's going to step in and just do a quick fix. Like this is outrageous. This is easily correctable. And I can only imagine how it felt. I can't imagine actually how it felt for you. And I'd love to hear you talk about the earliest days. And I'm wondering if you were like us thinking, surely this is going to course correct like any second here.
Of course. I mean, I had that sense. I think in the beginning, I had that sense of like, okay, you know, like this was a mistake. I'm clearly not trying to smuggle narcotics into this country. Such a small, empty, barely empty, you know, cartridges. And I'm like, somebody's going to step in and help me out with this. Maybe it's a mark on my traveling, you know, like I get screened more, or they kick me right out, right there and just say, hey, like you, we're putting you back on a plane back to the US. When I got took away in the handcuffs and from the customs and started being drove around Moscow to all these makeshift like hospitals to get a COVID test here, then go do a urine test over there. Then be told, oh, you criminal, you drug dealer, take tests, and just thrown into isolation at county. I was like, oh no, they're not going to make this quick. They're trying to figure out, they're contacting people right now to try to figure out how to make this something bigger. And that's when I think I was at my lowest, one of my lowest moments as well.
Too. Right there at the beginning.
Yeah, definitely.
Was your primary emotion fear, or did you skip straight to outrage over the injustice of it all? I'm trying to think.
Oh, no.
Our body's fear. Going to like fight or flight. Was fear?
Oh, definitely fear. Fear of unknown. Fear of who's going to come through this door. Why do everybody keep coming to the little eye hole and flipping it up, flipping it down, laughing? I hear the American. I don't know anything. Like legit, no one can talk to me. When I say zero words can be said to me except go, sit, stay. That's it. Like there was no interpreter. There was no translator. There was no Google Translate. Nothing. It was just, I ask a question. I try to use the smallest words, baby sentences. Nothing. Nothing.
No answers, no explanation. How long did you just kind of literally sit in isolation like that?
I mean, right before they took me from the custom building, I was able to be in contact with my lawyer. And, you know, he told me he would be in touch with me, but there's no, hey, on this day at this time, I'm going to be here. It's just like, oh, maybe he's coming today. Didn't come that day. Okay, maybe he's coming now. Okay, now about a third day of being in isolation, I'm like, well, damn, do they know where I'm at? Like, do they even know what jail I'm at?
How would you know?
Have they hit me? Have they just told him I was somewhere else? Are they keeping him from me? Because anything goes over there. Literally anything goes. Anything they want to go.
I want to hear more about that, because the court system in Russia, it's a sham and it's a spectacle. And the punitive measures are inhumane. And it's just unjust from top to bottom. And what's important to you that the rest of us know about that experience, that system, what it is like behind the curtain?
One of my scariest moments was when I got took to a hospital and they injected my arm with something. And I was like, what did you just inject me with?
You literally did not know what it was.
I had no idea. I found out like weeks later that it was a TB test. I had never had a TB test before, where they put the little bubble or they put the solution underneath your arm, because TB just runs rampant over there. Everybody has TB. They don't isolate the ones that do have it. But I was very scared. I was like, I'm going to die. Like, they literally just poisoned me. Like, I was so scared, so scared. Just being taken and not knowing. When I was getting transferred from the detention center to the prison, there was like a week or so, give or take some days. No one knew where I was. My lawyer didn't know where I was. They didn't know what prison I was going to pop up at. And I'm just like, this is so unsafe. Like, everything was so unsafe.
It just doesn't feel like a possible scenario to envision. Can you talk a little bit about your prison experience?
Well, the prison or detention center? Which one?
Both.
Both. Okay. So First day in the detention center, I go into quarantine. There's a huge knife. I talked about that and I thought that was like the most wildest thing. I'm like, I'm getting put into this tank with these other women. And I'm like, there's a knife in here. And they didn't take it back. They're supposed to take it back. I found out later that they give you a knife and scissors every day to cut bread and salami.
Okay.
But they're supposed to take it back. They never took it back. That just goes to show like how much they just don't care. Like, there's no
about your safety
rules. Yeah. Like, it's just like, oh, we forgot. Cool. Thanks. Thank you for that. They forget you outside. Like, I got forgot outside for like over an hour in the middle of winter in Russia. And everybody knows it's bone chilling cold there. They just forgot I was out there. Like, me banging on the bars, yelling, screaming. Just forgot me out there. Just forgot me. I don't know if they forgot me or if it was part of their tactics. You never know. But day-to-day life there, you're in a cell all day long. You come outside. It's supposed to be for 15 minutes. Sometimes it's an hour. And then they put you back in a cell. And you're just in that small cell every single day. They give you breakfast, lunch, dinner in that cell. You don't leave that cell. So that was very caged, zoo-like feeling. The penal colony, you work. I mean, it's a work camp. Like, that's exactly what it is. You work from sunup to sundown, basically. The weekends you have off. But they find ways to make you have to do stuff. And like, there's no rest time. And being in a room with over 50 some women with three toilets and one shower and no hot water, you can only imagine how hectic it is, like trying to find time to shower, get a 5-minute shower in, not even a shower, because you're literally scooping water and pouring it over you with a ladle, trying to use the bathroom, trying to find time to eat, and then also rest a little bit for the next workday.
I'm curious. Does it scare you at all? I may just be making this up. I might just be projecting this, but does it feel scary at all to write about your experience in Russia, to talk about their system and the injustice of it all? Is this at all scary? Or do you feel at this point so like safe and removed and secure that this is kind of in your rearview mirror in a way that feels safe?
Somewhat safe, but not in full, honestly, because history has proven that borders, seas, rivers, it doesn't matter. If someone wants to get to you, they will get to you. He will get to you. So definitely some fear in there, but I feel like I have to talk about it, and I have to talk about it to put it out there to readers. Cause I was oblivious. I was oblivious to all this. Like, you know, I knew we had America, like I knew about Americans being taken and You know, I've seen some Netflix series, Taken and all that, and all those different things, but you don't really understand it until you live it in, or you're close a part of it. And we have to shed light on it so more Americans can understand and know, and they can go and reach out to their senators, reach out to Congress, reach out to our president, write letters, blog, everything we can to make as much noise as we can to bring these people home. Because when I say everyone deserves to come home, it doesn't matter about your alleged crime. The condition, there's still conditions to that. Just because you commit a crime allegedly does not mean that you are subjected to any harsh, cruel conditions or punishment. You're still a human. You still deserve those rights. And there's no rights over there. It's free game.
What have you learned about Americans in detention now around the world unjustly? Because you're right, truly, your story elevated this particular injustice to the top of the poll, but I'm not sure that I had any meaningful information about that before your story. So what is the truth of it globally? What does this look like?
It's inhumane, and we catch it bad too, because we have the people have this idea that every American is just snobby, or we have our head up high and we don't understand, or we can't comprehend what's going on in their country. So they feel like we're there, so we need to get a little bit education on it. And it's just, you just have a target on your back. You have a big target on your back.
There are Americans in detention all over the place right now.
Everywhere, all over this world right now.
Yeah, your activism matters. And you have shown a big spotlight on something that's kind of in the shadows. And unless some of these folks, journalists, whoever they are, have a really, really noisy home community, they could be forgotten and left.
That was my biggest fear.
I'm sure it was.
That was the biggest fear of being forgotten. I actually wrote that in a letter to the president. I was scared of being forgotten because we all see it. There's a hot topic. Everybody's talking about it. And then the next hot thing happens, or this next big case happens, or I don't know, something. And then it's just, okay, on to the next one. And it's gone. So just trying to bring light to other detainees. I give credit to my lead, give credit to my team. You know, all last year, we had families of detainees coming to games. We had their names on the Jumbotron, you know, because we have this market. We're in front of these cameras. So I know me personally, and I'm going to continue to do this, is to support and use my platform to shed light on somebody that can't get in front of this camera.
That's good. Your people were noisy, your teammates, the league, your family. I mean, whatever you were hearing or not hearing over there, you never left our spotlight the whole time that you were gone. It was really phenomenal. At what point were you having correspondence with your wife, with your team, with the U.S. government in a way that you knew the gears were beginning to grind forward on your behalf?
I got all that information basically through my lawyer, honestly. The consulate was able to come see me, but when they came and saw me, they made a whole spectacle of it. And when I say they, I mean the Russian government and the guards there. I remember they made me sit in one special spot. They had an extra guard in there. They had put the little cameras that they wear like on their chest, body cams. They had sat, I counted 7 of them all around me so they could watch and listen to everything we were saying. And I was just like, do you think we're about to plan a prison break or something? Like, come on. Like, you already have one camera and microphones hidden in the plants that we all know about. Totally. So why do you need 7 more? But I learned everything through my lawyer. You know, the things that he could tell me, he would like show it to me. I would read it. He would take those back.
On a personal level, this is one of the most traumatizing experiences I can imagine. Guess what? Your feet don't have to hurt. There are solutions to foot pain. Superfeet insoles are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. Why Superfeet? Simply put, they work.
Some call it magic, others call it life-changing, but don't just take our word for it. Superfeed has thousands of five-star reviews. Superfeed supports people hitting their stride, breaking the mold, and finding their happy place. From pro athletes to lunch break legends, pursuing mountain peaks or peak performance, Superfeed supports better. You plus Superfeed is better together. So for a limited time, Superfeed is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeed.com and save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. So hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. Summer is coming, and so is my much-anticipated meet camp. The past few summers, I've been taking some time to travel alone. It's time for me to read and explore small towns and meet new people. And this year, I'm thrilled to have a new way to plan my adventures. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there, no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in. For my trip, I'm considering a wine tasting event or maybe a sunset sail. I've been reading real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already done the activities. Viator also offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if your plans change. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What does trauma recovery look like for you? Because you've come back, and if, for us looking in, you've re-entered life. You're back on the court. You're back at home. You're having a baby. Like, you, life is like re-emerging, and you're back in your skin. But the interior trauma of an experience like this is so severe. I wonder, what does this kind of care look like for you to really heal truly from it?
It's up and down. I would say it's a roller coaster at times. You know, that first year being back, I had a lot of highs, a lot of lows. I would be okay, and then I wouldn't be okay. I had times of just being super depressed, and then I had times of like just, I was super happy for some reason. Things were triggering, like being cold in the house. I didn't recognize it at first, but my mood had shifted. And I think my wife had noticed it too, that I was just a little bit more snappy, a little bit more on edge. And then I finally realized, like, it's because I'm cold. Like, I was so cold in those cells and I couldn't warm up that. And I used to love being cold in the house, like turn the thermostat all the way down. But now I'm like, no, I can't do it anymore. I have to be hot. And I can't sit in one room for a very long time. We used to love to just sit in the bed, watch Netflix all day.
You start to feel caged in.
Well, I feel like I'm back in the detention center because all I could do was sit on my bed the whole day. So that it was just different little thing. But I will say, like, talking to a counselor that understood, that was big for me. Because a lot of people, it was like, go to a support group. But it's like, where is there a support group where someone was held, you know, in a prison overseas? You know, they can't relate. So it was tough.
You wrote that your relationship with God, with faith, changed for a number of reasons. When you realized you and your wife wanted to have kids, that it accelerated while in detainment. You wrote this, the moment you realize you may never walk free, doubt disappears. Some call that jailhouse Jesus. I call it sense. And it's the same good sense my foremothers had navigating swamps in the pitch black, escaping bondage and heading for the north. They weren't asking God for proof of his existence. Our survival as a people was evidence enough. This powerful, powerful thing to think, to say, to communicate. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. What faith has meant to you, maybe both before and then during and since, and how that shifted, if it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think being powerless, a lot of times we're in control of the things we do. We're in control of a lot, or we feel like we're in control a lot in our everyday lives. But being over there, I was such in a place of I need help. I couldn't control anything. It was out of my hands. I had to rely on something or I would have went crazy. And I think when I finally got my Bible, it took me a while to get it because they had to read all the way through it and make sure everything was safe in it, which they did in about a month and a half. I was like, wow, y'all read the Bible and understood it that well in a month and a half? It's pretty good, especially if you can't speak English. That's pretty good. But, you know, once I got it and I was reading, there was little stories here and there throughout the whole Bible where it meant more to me. Like I could relate more. And it just hit closer to home for me. And, you know, my faith was growing right before this attainment already anyway. I had just told my wife, I was like, you know, I want to find a church here locally. You know, we want to have kids. I want to raise them in the church. You know, we were on the up and up. And then I just had to do all the groundwork by myself there with just the Bible. I would literally have Bible study on Sundays. And I mean, I would just read. Write what I could comprehend, and I would write how like it applied to my life or how it could apply to my life moving forward. And I think that's what got me through, honestly.
I want to ask you a question. It's kind of lies at the intersection of both your experience and a conversation that is absolutely in the zeitgeist right now. I mean, obviously the world's been watching Caitlin Clark and the college girls right now making a real run. And for whatever reason, because there have always been like elite athletes in the league like you, for whatever reason, the conversation is elevated around their experience this year. And so one thing I'm hearing everywhere right now, and of course, I'm telling Noah about the flood, is the pay discrepancy between the WNBA league and of course the guys. And it's pretty severe. It's not small. It's not close. At the start of your memoir, you talk about the emotional and the physical toll that it takes to fly back and forth from Phoenix to Russia. That's no joke. And obviously, you and tons of other pros make that decision and that sacrifice because you have to. It's a part of your livelihood. I think that you, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that you said that 80% of your annual income came from your career, your international career in Russia. That takes a lot of the choice right out of the atmosphere. And so I'd like to hear you speak into this. What do you think about this? What do you think the solutions are here? Do you feel hopeful about this?
Yeah, so I definitely feel hopeful. And I think that the future is bright, honestly, moving forward with Caitlin, Angel, and a lot of others, and still some still in college to this day, right? Still in college right now, that will be coming out, you know, in the following years. It's just such an enticing, like, just energy that's going on right now. And we have a lot of new fans that are crossing over and, you know, become and picking up our game, which is great. Because now, you know, we can make more noise about it and people are finding out and saying, well, this is so unjust. And it is. And we need you to come to the games. We need you to keep talking. We need you to keep challenging. And, you know, if you want to change something, you got to buy into it. So we need everybody to buy into it. We need to challenge these companies to stop just checking a box and saying, oh, we fight for equality. We had a month. Oh, we had some shirts, you know, like that's cute. That's a step, but we need you to put dollars, you know, dollars down to make a difference. And I will say this, our stock, it's rich and you're going to get great games, a great atmosphere, great place to bring your family. And I think more people are starting to see that and realize that and bank on us. And it's just going to get even better.
It's like the message is out on that. It's been so exciting to watch the stats and the metrics of viewership this year and how many viewers and attendees women's sports are pulling. And that's what it is ultimately, is that's the numbers game. That's where it's won and lost right there in the seat sales.
Oh, yeah. And they can't use that anymore because the numbers show that we had more viewership. We had more attendance. And,
by a
you
lot.
Know, it was by a lot. Even year before this, like we were like right there. And now we have passed and it's just going to keep growing. So, you know, you had so many people say, I didn't even watch the men's game. And I'm not saying you can't watch it. I'm just saying like, it's shifting and we're here now. So what's the next roadblock you're going to try to throw in our faces? Because we'll knock that one down too.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt. It feels like the winds of change are shifting and turning in a way that feels really exciting and way more fair ultimately. And so I look forward to all these barriers that you are knocking down for the next generation. They're going to run. They're going to run forward on some of this ground you're plowing up. And I love it for young girls watching and the vision that they're catching for their futures, for what's possible for them. It's thrilling.
I'm obsessed. My friend Chelsea was wearing the softest cashmere sweater in that perfect weight for spring. She told me it was under $50, made by a fantastic company named Quince. And I could shop for my laptop, which is my dream. So I immediately ordered the cashmere tee. Now I want it in every color. Quince offers staple pieces like Chelsea's Mongolian cashmere sweater, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, classic like 14 karat gold jewelry. You can upgrade your wardrobe with luxury essentials, but unbeatable prices. You guys, seriously, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And I know what you're thinking, but Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible practices and premium fabrics, which I love. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/hatmaker for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/hatmaker to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hatmaker.
This episode of For the Love with Jen Hatmaker is brought to you by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. They can be big, difficult, even scary life things, and also small inconveniences that add up day after day. The thing is, when we keep them all bottled up on the inside and just try to grin and bear it, it can start to affect us and the people around us negatively. We may even isolate ourselves, which makes it even worse. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. This was the case for me when I was at the highest stress level in my life, where the stress was even having physical consequences for me. Therapy was a huge part of my healing journey to learn how to manage the stress. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fortheLove today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/fortheLove.
Let's just wrap it up here. I mentioned this earlier, and I do not mean this in a trite way, because there is no possible way to have experienced all you've experienced and then just tie it up in a tidy bow. And now it's a shiny story. And that's just not true. That's not how trauma works. You lost almost a year of your life. Almost a year. It was so long and scary. And those aren't days you'll ever get back. But it is wonderful to see you thriving and flourishing again and being in your element. I'm so excited for you and your wife. You're having a baby.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah. You're going to have a baby. Yeah. Your baby's due this summer.
Yes. Yes. Coming really soon here. Really soon. Really soon. So I'm super excited. I'm so excited
you're gonna have
for that.
Book and baby. I mean, this is a year. This year feels like redemption.
It is. It does feel like that. I actually feel like a basketball player again, too. You know, last year, I didn't feel like a basketball player. Like, I didn't feel like me. And I finally feel like me now. You know, and
what is that about? Great. Why? What did it just take time?
It just took a lot of time sitting there in those cells for so long, losing as much muscle mass as I did, trying to put it back on, having setbacks and all these different pains and things popping up. And my diet had to change a little bit. It was just so much where I just didn't feel like myself. Like, I look back at films and I cringe. Like, I can't watch my last year. Like, I just can't. Like, it makes me want to cry, honestly, looking at myself out there. And I know it wasn't my fault, like, why I look like that. But at the same time, I'm such a competitor. Like, I'm just like, I should have been able to get back quicker. Like, I should have been able to bounce back quicker. But that's just my overachiever expert like mindset of an athlete. So of course I'm hard on myself.
That's just what you get for being a champion for so long, is you don't have another gear. That's the only way you know how to operate. I'm so glad for you. I'm so glad that you're home and safe. I'm so glad that you have recovered and you're recovering. And I'm looking forward to you having the experience of having your book in people's hands for them to read your full story, because you're pretty candid. There's a lot in there. You didn't hold a lot back, and I'm excited for the response you're going to get. I just hope that you get back a millimeter of all you've put out, of all that you've given to your fans, to your family and your teammates, and to the world. I hope that you receive some of that back, and it feels like a really big rock in the river of your healing story. And then you'll forget all about it, because you won't have any sleep, because you're going to have a baby.
That's I know, it. Right?
That's it. Enjoy it.
Yes. Yes. We cannot wait for that. I just can't wait to come home from a long day and like just the stresses of everything, and then just see this ball of joy. And then it all doesn't matter. Like all that matters is baby right there. So
it's real. You're right. And boy, you've got a lot of pavement in front of you. That's really exciting, and you deserve it. And
thank you.
I'm excited for the joy that's still about to onboard in your life. And I hope the trajectory is up forever. Can you tell my community where they can find your book?
Yeah. I mean, you can find it at any local bookstore near you, online, audiobook, as well as hard copy in stores close by you, May 7th. Yeah.
Thanks for being on today. Thanks for coming after practice. The way that I said yes to a podcast after a long day, I just said no. So thanks for saying yes. Thanks for being here. I'm so happy to have met you. I'm just cheering for you.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate this so much.
The For the Love podcast with Jen Hatmaker is a presentation of Odyssey and produced by Four Eyes Media, with Laura Neitzling, producer, Abby Stevens, production director, Gregory DiMario, production assistant, and Lauren Winfield, researcher. Odyssey's executive producers are Jenna Weiss-Berman and Leah Reese-Dennis. Special thanks to the team at Odyssey, Maura Curran, Melissa Wester, Matt Casey, Kate Hutchinson, Eric Donnelly, Aaron Constantino, Kurt Courtney, and Hilary Schupf. Listen and follow For the Love, an Odyssey podcast produced by Four Eyes Media, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a production of Four Eyes Media.